Hello, Facebook land.
Hello.
How are you out there? It's Kat Caldwell Myers, and I am back with a live stream of the Adventure Paradox podcast. I'm so excited to have with me here today the future host of the Abundance podcast. We are going to definitely talk about that because abundance is like one of the funnest words I've ever heard.
No, it was so fun to pick it up.
So fun to pick it up. Anna, will you please introduce yourself and your title of being a clarity and confidence coach?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I love the whole vibe. I love that, like, when you got settled in, you like have a cozy blanket. I may have been binge watched like Love is Blind, and so like I'm so used to like watching people in a pod with a blanket, so it's like very much evoking that. And we've also never met, but we do get to see each other. And I'm just so happy to be here. And I love your whole vibe and what your podcast is about and what you're offering to the world. So first and foremost, thank you, not only from me, but for everyone that this is touching. Seriously, just so much love.
Thank you, Anna. It's a mirror right back to you. So thank you.
And it's funny. I could go so many different directions, but I'll start with I'm Anna K. Morris. I'm a recovering perfectionist and people pleaser. Who came to the coaching and personal development world kicking and screaming. So I am the most unlikely of all the people to be here right now doing the work that I do, but I came from a place of like deep dissatisfaction, unfulfillment, lack of purpose in a corporate career, and slowly moved myself out of it, which is what I'm really passionate about helping people through, is that so frequently we think that a career or a relationship or whatever is the problem, and infrequently it is. It's actually the lens that we're looking at things through, which is where I really help people to gain that kind of clarity of like, what is the actual mismatch, right? Is it the relationship? Is it the job? So frequently we're just looking through the lenses that are colored blue, and we run around the world and we're like, no, the world is blue. And as a coach, what I help you to see is that you just could take off the glasses and see that it's actually yellow.
So
Or,
good. So
right?
good. And I love the flamingos you have behind you. And most of them are pink, but a couple of them are, there's an orange one, right? One. And the way we see things. My 8-year-old daughter is getting into Far Side jokes.
Oh
And
yeah, I forgot about those.
I know Gary Larson making a
So
comeback.
fun.
What a throwback, but also explaining humor to her. And so one of the jokes was, a colorblind joke, right? This, I couldn't see roses are red, violets are blue. I don't know that because I'm blind, right? With Gary Larson, right? So Gary Larson. But explaining, if you can't actually see, you wouldn't know what colors are. And I feel like a coach, they help you see the next level because you can't see yourself. You're the only person in the room you can't see. When you got into coaching, because you said you came in kicking and screaming, so there's a
Oh
story.
man.
We need to know about the kicking and screaming story. Where were you? What was going on in your life? And then how did you give yourself permission, open up? What did you hear that made you say, all right, there might be a different way to see this? It could be that the flamingo is orange.
Well, I'll say this, we mostly don't come to this work from a like, oh, I'm just like kind of curious, right? Usually you either have an accident, you get really sick, right? It's usually, oftentimes, I will say, it's a big wake-up call. Now, I hope to meet people before that happens. And I was met just before. I think I probably would have self-imploded, but I was just deeply unhappy. And what I knew, this was March of 2008. I was about 27, 28 years old. I'm 44 now. And I was living in Manhattan on the Upper East Side. I made a lot of money. I had a great career that gave me a lot of flexibility. I worked in pharmaceutical sales for a very nice French company. I had 5 weeks vacation. Like I had plenty. A very nice boyfriend who I loved. He worked at the Met. We went to fancy parties. All the things that people told me I would be happy if I had these things. And the problem with that was that I wasn't, first of all. But the bigger issue was that I actually had no idea what made me happy. And I can remember somebody saying, well, what makes you happy? And I would just fall apart because it was so awful to know that I didn't know. And I had never been asked that. I had never been encouraged to explore that. I mean, I have wonderful parents, but that wasn't encouraged for them. So you teach what you know, right? And you know, everybody was like a work hard, put your nose down and like get good grades, go to a good college, get a good job and you'll be fine. Well, you know, I wasn't. And I just felt really, really unhappy. But I think the worst part about it, and I think that you and I connected in this way initially, was that like, I was so ashamed. It was like this deep shame because here I am, I'm like white, privileged, upper middle class. Like that's a very bad feeling.
Yeah.
To have this shame and guilt and know that there are people starving. There are people with real problems. And anytime I would bring it up to a parent or a friend, I immediately got shut down.
You're not allowed to have these problems.
Well, they were like, do you know how lucky you are? Like that was always I remember being at a pharmaceutical happy hour and there was this girl that I'd never liked there and I liked her and I'd had a couple martinis. So I went over and I was like, I've never really liked you. And she's like, yeah, I've never liked you either. It's New York. You can say things like that. It was great.
Icebreaker. Go for it.
And she just laughed and she's like, I've never liked you either. And I was like, but I like you now. And why? Something is so distinctly different. And I would like to know what you did because I know you did something. And she was like, I did this group coaching program and it changed my life. I was like, great, sign me up.
Wow.
That was it. And that opened Pandora's box. It ended up being the Landmark Forum, if you're familiar with Landmark or, yeah.
Okay. I know a little about Landmark, but will you tell people what Landmark is? Because this is such a mic drop. Go ahead.
Yeah. So it was March 2008. I remember it distinctly. I went to weekly therapy. I was in weekly therapy with, you know, on the Upper West Side. And I was so angry with this Landmark thing that I was going to. It's 3 days, by the way. It's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday from like 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. I mean, it's intense, right? And they hadn't sent me an email. This was how superficial I was. They had not sent me an email with what the attire was or like what food I should be packing. Like what should I have a notebook? Like I didn't have like that, but I mostly was bothered by didn't know what to wear. And that was very like integral to like who I was at the time. Right. Like I lived for sample sales in New York and all the things. That's embarrassing to say, but yeah, that was true. I got a phone call from like the person that was, I don't know, at the front desk. And he was like, Iman Khan, I remember exactly who it was. And he was like, I am so sorry. You should have gotten an email. I would like to give you 100% refund right now and you don't need to come tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I was ready to fight because I was somebody that worked in pharmaceutical sales and I worked with like 18 hospital systems in New York and I was always ready for a fight. Right. Like I was like against doctors all day long. Like I was constantly like fighting for my product to be. So like I was just wired for aggression and it had gotten me really far, except like it wasn't working. Right. And I was just all masculine, all masculine boyfriend. Anyway. And he was like, yeah, I'd like to offer you a full refund. And I remember saying, let me call you back. And I got off the phone and this was in my office. And I was like, he's just going to give me a full refund. And he's not even like trying to like justify his position about like why he didn't send me these things. And I said, I'm so curious about why he didn't try to like screw me over. Like, that's what I thought would happen. Right. And she was like, it sounds like you'd like to find out. And so I called him back and I was like, I'll see you tomorrow morning. Is the room going to be cold? Should I bring a sweater? And I walked in the next morning. It doesn't matter what he said, probably. Yes. The room was freezing, I think. And I walked in the next morning and I don't know, there were like 200 or 300 seats, super uncomfortable. And everyone in Manhattan from like a homeless person to a Broadway star to like a kind of guy in private equity, like everything in between. Right. And like my mom. And it was like, who are these people? And I remember thinking like, I don't have anything in common with anybody. Like this can't be right. And at the end of those 3 days, I was like, I am every single one of you. And it was like the whole veil was lifted. And that was when I started exploring who I actually am, separate from the belonging, separate from the career, separate from all the things on my resume. And it was like Pandora's box. I ended up going and becoming a yoga and meditation teacher. I realized I didn't hate my job. And I started a wellness consulting business on the side because my job gave me like ultimate freedom and flexibility and a great salary that I could afford to live in New York and not be constrained around money and all of these things. And then eventually I left my job. I left my boyfriend. I left the city and met the man of my dreams and traveled around the world. And here I am outside of Austin, Texas with two little boys and, you know, three businesses.
Okay. How many years ago was that?
That was 16.
16 years. Okay. So you've been on this journey for a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I love, and it's making me think of a meditation that Oprah and Deepak Chopra used to do, these 21-day meditation challenges.
Yeah, I know them. I've done them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He'll do the one where he just takes you back. Kathy Heller does this one too. You know, they're friends, right? But where he just takes you back to the I am, the I am, where we are all one. Yeah. There's no separation. The separation is the illusion. Right. Mm-hmm, and that's what I get when I hear that story. But I also hear, you know, a person who's deeply unhappy. And sometimes I think we get so focused on the adventure, the goal, the summit of like, I got to be happy. What do I need to do to be happy? And we miss that, you know, it's actually in this moment. It's not that thing. It's not when we get the body, get the job, get the guy, get the whatever it is. It's like that comes from this inner happiness or intrinsic joy. You know, a lot of people are playing around with those two different words, right? But I love that story so much. And now you're in Austin, Texas. And where and when did you transition to recognizing you wanted to help others and give this away? And you probably don't give it away. I'm guessing that you...
I did for 15 years. I think that my friends and family are like, thank God you're starting a coaching business. Like, stop giving us like unsolicited coaching advice. But, you know, so learned after I did Landmark, my therapist fired me. My therapist was like, you actually don't need to be here anymore. I went a few sessions afterwards. She was like, I think you got what you were looking for. And I just like started being curious and exploring new things. And one of those things was I hired an executive business coach who I did not know at the time was essentially teaching me Julia Cameron's Artist Way.
Love.
Which is funny because she's actually not read it. And we're great friends. And we talk about it, I'm like, so you really not like, you know that you were like coaching me on the book. She was like, I've heard that, but like, that wasn't it. Right. Teaches like three pages of morning pages. If you're not familiar with what I'm talking about, just Google The Artist Way by Julia Cameron. And then I ended up coaching it because I did read the book. My next door neighbor in Manhattan was an interior designer. And I said something about working with a coach and journaling. And she was like, oh yeah, you're doing your morning pages from The Artist Way. I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not an artist. Because, you know, I was in the art world. So I was very clear that I was not one, right? And it just helped me realize like that there's creativity in all of us. And that's like that inner part of us that comes alive. Like enthusiasm, the root word comes from being with God.
Yes.
And it was, and for me, I needed to come at it. It took me a while to move into like yoga and meditation. I was so hardwired in my masculine. I really needed to come at it from my brain, from like the journaling. And it was only when I would fatigue the amount of time, because it was a 45-minute writing protocol that she taught me. And that's what I teach my clients as well. It's about that the 35-minute mark that I got sick of my garbage. And then something else started to write that I was like, I think this is like what people talk about God. Like, I don't know exactly, but something feels different. It feels like somebody's writing to me these really sweet love notes, like very Elizabeth Gilbert kind of. It was around the time of like Eat, Pray, Love. And I remember thinking like, yeah, that's what I'm feeling right now. Like this deep belonging. And just, I couldn't ever mess it up. And I was messing things up all over the place, but it was like this feeling of like, it wasn't even like failure wasn't possible. It didn't exist. And that really hooked me. So that really started my journaling practice. And through that, I've done a lot of different things. I had like a play company in Houston. I, you know, moved to Houston to be with my now husband. And I started a grown-up play company that like taught grown-ups how to play like kids again. And I would get paid to like teach Duck Duck Goose. And I mean, it just kind of led me in these. And then, you know, my husband was really burnt out. He worked in oil and gas and finance. And I was like, you want to like travel around? And then we both became Landmark seminar leaders. I should mention that. So I went down the rabbit hole, did every course at Landmark while also working with a coach, while also getting deep into the yoga and meditation and spiritual world, all keeping my pharmaceutical job, by the way. Like, so very, very yin and yang, and was selling drugs that I really believed in. So like, there wasn't a problem with that. But then I was a severance package that like fund, you know, and then I replaced my income with my consulting business. So, you know, it happened over time. And I think that's the thing that I really want to tell people is that like, I forget that it's been a 16-year journey. It feels oftentimes like just yesterday, but it wasn't. I think that it's so hard sometimes to imagine where to start, because for me, there was so much to dismantle, but you just start somewhere. And I just started with like one coach who taught me how to journal and to have a date with myself every week. Again, very Julia Cameron, very like artist date thing. And that's still the framework of what I teach, because I really think that it helps to ground us. Now, there are a lot of different directions that will lead me when I'm working with clients. I love human design. I love breath work. I'm getting into like energy frequency stuff and using a Healy device. And like, there are all kinds of modalities available to us. Where I really love working is with people at the beginning of their journey. And that to me, like, I love to be the Pandora's box. And right. I, yeah, that's really fun. And then, you know, I think that you saw, I lead like self-care. I led a spring self-care summit. I'm doing one every season. So I'll do like a summer fun summit. The fall one will probably be something around like scheduling, it feels like, because there's like so much in the fall, right? Like, how do you make that playful and fun? Because I really then have like a treasure trove of amazing people to point. Like, okay, you want to dive deeper into human design? Like, I've got somebody like that. You know, I've always been the connector. Like, you and I were just talking about delegating things. Like, I'm very much not the one to help you move, but I will sit on your sofa and delegate what everybody else should do. And I think that's what's so fun is once you start to know yourself and really lean into that's who I am, this is what I have to offer, mm-hmm. right? Then it's so, you can really relax. And that's what I want for everyone.
Yeah, that space of connection, right? And being the connector. And what I'm seeing as you're talking is the connection between seasons, right?
Yeah.
Spring, you know, comes out of winter and then fades or fully blooms into summer.
Yeah.
Interesting is, and perhaps is why your gift is at that inception point, right? Mm. Is that the transition, and I've already known, I love shoulder seasons, but I'm also, when we're in winter or we're in summer, I'm full on, you know what I mean? Like, I'm fully in that season, but I actually really love when it's changing a lot. So here we are in Idaho. Yesterday it was blizzarding and snowed again.
Really?
Today the sun is shining and we're going to get 10 days of sun back to 50 degrees. You know what I mean?
So
there's a lot of back and forth, and my children, you know, put the snow pants away and then we pull them back out, you know, and there's a lot of back and forth before we fully step into the next season of becoming.
Yes.
And I wonder, because a lot of your posts are, and I know you're not specifically coaching on parenting, but just personally, your journey as a mother, your journey finding your partner who you knew you wanted to have children with, right? Let's talk about some of those inception moments.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this about that. I didn't know that I wanted to have kids with him. I didn't know that I wanted to have kids. So if anyone is listening and has heard this thing that people say, which is very much what people were saying to me, like, oh, your biological clock will hit. It never did. I remember being pregnant. I was like, is it yet? I mean, I'm doing this, but like still has not hit. I have kids right now. I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. And Derek just said to me recently, my husband, he was like, so when Jack is 7, I was like, what? He was like, where did you think he was going to live, Anna? And I was like, I mean, what do you mean? And he was like, have you thought all this through? I was like, of course I haven't. If I thought things through, I would never do anything. Mm. I would be paralyzed by analysis and fear and all of that. I didn't think about him being 7. He's still going to be here?
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, your kids are what? How old? 8 and what?
6 and 8. Yeah.
6 and 8. Okay. So I'm right behind you. I'm 4 and 2. And I had kids in my 40s, you know? And it wasn't a thing that I even thought about. I actually never noticed that I was my age until like this very rude nurse starts laughing. She was like, oh, you're a geriatric patient. I was like, I'm sorry, say what, lady? I was ready to like fight. Totally. Yeah. Totally. So those inception points, it's always for pages. And it's why like I love that practice. And I don't get that in yoga and I don't get that in meditation. And I do both every day. So it's not, I'm not saying that like this over that. It's very much like an and. For me, because I know I'm very, like to go into Ayurveda, like I'm very pitta, I'm very type A, I'm very driven. I was a competitive swimmer, a really good student. It makes a difference for me to see it written down. And there is action when I see it written, right? Like I was just writing this morning. I have really young kids. The 2-year-old barely sleeps. And I still journal 45 minutes every single day. So when people are like, oh, I don't have time, I'm like, that's just not the case. If you knew what was on the other side of a journaling practice like I know, you would do it. Yeah. Right. Because I get my whole life on those pages. So this morning when I was writing, like instantly, I saw the clarity around some stuff that's been unclear. That's why I teach clarity and confidence. I saw really clearly like what the actions were to take. So then what do you know? I grab my post-it note and I'm like, oh, these are the 4 things I have to do today. Great. Handled.
Yeah.
Right. Because I don't have time to swim around in the what should I do? What's the next right? You know what I mean? It's exhausting. I don't have time for that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So when you talk those inception points, it's been very pivotal pages. And sometimes I won't take the action. And that's usually when things will get painful. I'll get sick, right? There will be a fight, something will happen, and it'll force your hand. Mm-hmm. And that's unfortunately where we're all led so frequently to then doing the work. And I'm always like, can we just get to it earlier? Like I can see things for people. If you follow human design at all, like I'm a 6-2 projector. So projectors can see stuff. I'm married to a projector. We're both life coaches. Like we live in the land of like, we can see this is going to go bad. So we're just constantly trying to stay like a step ahead if we can.
Yeah. Beautiful. So mm-hmm. I love also this, this exchange between you and your partner of him saying, so when he's 7, you know, I have no idea what the context was, if it was a bigger bed or a different room.
Yeah. I think it was like bedrooms. I think it was like where bunk beds or something like that. And I was literally like, he's here. He's going to still be here. Like, I don't know if I can make it that long. He's going to be here a long time, man.
I talk about this book, which I don't know if you've picked up a copy.
No. I love horses too.
About how statistically women with children under the age of 5, especially if they're staying at home, most depressed, right?
Oh.
And in this adventure, my children were 2 and 6 months old.
Yeah. Right?
You're really in the thick of it. Lots of diapers, yeah. Lots of, you know, neediness. And I think that paradox of being fully present in this moment, just mm-hmm. fully present, right? Mm-hmm. And, yeah. You know, their feet are like sticking off the bed and we're like, oh, maybe we get a bigger bed now. Just being fully present. And we live in a society where we have so many labels and so many questions that fit into a box. But the truth is, none of us were made to live in a box. I mean, this is why so much of my medicine is bringing people back to nature.
Yes. Yes.
Bring people back to the animals. You know, I was with my dog this morning, and David G, I don't know if you know him, but he's on Insight Timer. He has this really low voice.
I do Insight Timer. I have seen him. Yeah.
Gotta know him. Anyways, he's come back to your breath. And just in and out and go deeper and relaxing. And I have my hand on my dog and I'm just witnessing and feeling how beautifully he lets go and how much peace and trust there is between us to meditate together and go deep in that breathing, right? Mm-hmm. Cats, the greatest teachers of how to sleep, because they do it 15 hours a day, you know, dogs. Yeah. Also to remind us to get out of ourselves. Tony Robbins says this a lot: in our head, we're dead, right? Mm-hmm. And so I have an author's week coming up. It's actually 2 weeks, believe it or not, because we have so many authors who are going to come on the show. And getting into writing, I would love to hear more about, because you've conveyed it beautifully, but that connection, because again, what happened for me when I wrote this book is it wasn't actually the book itself, the story. I said I would write it, I needed to get it out, but it was what happened after. And when I was able to finally look at myself and that story I was telling myself was true, that is when I discovered the power of the next chapter, which happened. In this moment, it happens in this moment, whatever we do with what's next. But sometimes we can't even see ourselves until we start to put it down and take a moment to look at it. So I'd love to hear more about this journaling practice, and especially as you're a mom, and I know there are a lot of moms listening on our show who are just hungry for that medicine, and they might be in the paradox, right? Or the excuse of, I really don't have the time, 45 minutes, so much, you know. How do you get started if you're having a day like that? And tell us about what's on the other side, a little bit more of that writing specifically.
Well, it's great that you asked that, because I can sometimes take for granted that, like, what I've heard people tell me that they journal, I'm like, oh no, that's not what I'm talking about. Like, I've heard a lot of my clients are like, well, I journal and I like write what I'm thankful for. I'm like, oh, stop. Like, that's not what this is for, right? Let's just baseline it. We're privileged. We're in a first world country for most of us with clean running water and food to eat. We're grateful, right? So I'm not promoting a gratitude journal. And that's fine if people, you know, if that ends up getting written. I think that so frequently we aren't willing to look at what's really making us angry. And we disguise it as saying that I'm tired. And I hear constantly women say, like, I'm just so tired. And I'm like, oh, okay. Are you exhausted? And they're like, yes, I'm exhausted. And I was like, could you try? And again, thinking of like changing the lenses of the glasses, I'm like, are you a little bit mad? And usually when I say that, because I've also started teaching yoga again, and I said this to a student yesterday, and she was like, I'm actually really mad. I'm like, yeah, there we go. There we go. Plenty to write about. When you actually start to like let it breathe and have a voice and be on the pages, and that we have lots to write about, because we mostly weren't taught by our mothers that was a safe emotion to have. At least I wasn't. And most of the women that I work with, they weren't either. And so I really want the women that I'm working with and the women that are listening to this podcast to lean into that. Because I think that it's what doesn't work is that, like, everything's fine. Like, we're just tired.
Hey, Kat, here for a quick commercial break. If you haven't heard, my book, The Adventure Paradox, is available on Amazon, and it's been getting some really amazing reviews. It's actually been a little bit overwhelming, and maybe too much to say in the middle of this interview, so we'll get back to it, but I did want to let you know it is available. It was a bestseller in 6 categories, and if you really enjoy this podcast, I think you will really enjoy this book. So please go check it out.
And I'm like, no, like, you're actually burnt out because you're not dealing with the emotion at hand. One of the greatest trainings I ever had was my yoga teacher training, not because I learned how to teach yoga. That was a byproduct. I lived at Kripalu, which is the former yoga ashram that, of course, had a sex scandal and then became a for-profit yoga center, right? It's in the Berkshires in Massachusetts. It's great. But it's a Jesuit school. It's not that fancy. And I remember watching a girl hysterically crying in the hallway on like day two. And we were there for a month. And everyone's like, oh, it's Kripalu, feel your feelings. And like, no one cared. And everyone walked right by her. And she just was like having her feelings. And for somebody that was like Miss Pris, voted best dressed perfectionist to the T, to witness that and be jealous of it was something to look at. Right. And it's another thing that I take people through is like jealousy. Man, I love it. Because jealousy is a map, right? Jealousy is something that we want that we don't have, or mostly we have not given ourselves permission to go after, right? So when I get that hit of like, I see something on social media, that's the best place to get it. Or like something that a friend has or whatever, I'm like, oh, how fun. Let me lean into that and let me do some writing about it. What is it about that new car that a friend has that like makes me think I want? I was like, oh, I don't want a new car. I want a clean car. What does that mean? Like, oh, I'm feeling disrespected in my house because the kids are trashing my car. So guess what? New rule, no food in the car.
Okay. That's
like, it's like, but that's why journaling. It's like, because it takes some time to get to know yourself. And we're so busy getting to know everybody else and what they want. And you want to know who you're with forever is you. So my goal always, and this is for other people, but let's face it, it's mostly for myself, is I want to like being with me. That's it. There's no other game to play. And that's all that I help people shine on. And that's what I think is so healing about journaling, is that like it helps me go through the stuff that I don't feel like is okay. And I get to work it through. And when I spend that amount of time, I always get to the nectar. I always get to the love.
Yeah. I love this practice. Are you familiar with Matthew McConaughey's journaling? Okay. And green lights. It's making me think about it a lot. He's been on my mind quite a bit lately. But what's coming through for me as you're talking is this idea of it's okay to not be okay.
Yeah.
And like to really go there. And I think
You said we're supposed to be happy all the time. That's exhausting and boring.
Well, and also, you know, it's interesting how many ways our society slices that, right? So You've got to be happy. You've got to look pretty. You've got to have the good job. You've got to have the, you know, 2.5 children, you know, the white picket. And what's interesting is sort of the pushback against that we're seeing, and the embrace of everything that is, right? Which is really what as you're talking is give yourself the time, 45 minutes to go all the way through there to the place where you can love yourself even when it's messy. How about especially when it's messy? Especially when it's messy. And I think, you know, I'm thinking about things I heard growing up. No one wants to hear that. No one wants to see that. No one wants to know that. And then what's happening as we are becoming more transparent and passing on to the next generation, like this community of mothers and leaders that I'm connected to like you, right? We're doing it differently, doing something differently. DSD, as Amy Porterfield says, you know, and why? And so much of it is the healing that we didn't have. You know, if you're going to cry, you go to your room, right? Like you're not going to be seen. You're not going to be soothed. You're not going to be secure. You're not going to be safe in those emotions. Nobody wants to hear that. Nobody wants that. And so for me, witnessing myself as a parent, when my children are struggling, right? When they're having their moments, and immediately recognizing that I get to live through all of my own childhood experiences and do something differently. right? Yeah. And that it's okay to have those memories and have that reflection of, oh, this is maybe why I'm programmed this way. And this is where that's not working for me. And this is where I could try something different. And I love, again, that perspective of working with a coach and having someone else play it back to you. So like I did a mini-sode recently, and it was part of why podcasting is so powerful. And we're going to go there now. We're going to talk about this. Because you finally hear your, right? Mm-hmm. So journaling, I feel like when you journal, you see yourself and something very special happens, especially when we're doing it by hand. And I'm guessing you're writing with a pen.
Oh, always. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Something very special happens. And there are a lot of studies about this. But I also think when we allow ourselves to voice something and finally hear what it is we're saying and play it back and share it with others, this incredible ripple effect happens. You know, we, first of all, we start to hold ourselves accountable. I mean, this happened for me in the book. I had this dream at the very end. My friend who's actually coming on the podcast next week, who helped me publish the book, she has a publishing service. And the dream was, be the person you say you're going to be.
Yeah.
And I realized, wait a second, if I pull out and I give myself two more months of editing and pruning and continuing versus I said I was going to get this out this summer, August 31st, it dropped. Still summer by a day. Yeah. Right? I recognized this is what I'm saying, right? So we start to put it all together, what we're feeling, what we're saying, what we're doing. So it's not just talking the talk. It's actually the walk that I start to see come through when people are podcasting.
100%. And it makes me think of Martha Beck's book, The Way of Integrity. Familiar with it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I quit drinking September 3rd, my birthday. And it was all about, it was just integrity. I was like, I say I want to live in full alignment. And there's this little voice who has been telling me for 20 years, stop drinking.
Yeah.
Right. And I was like, no, but I don't have a problem and da, 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 and all these things. And I just remember thinking, the heck what I'm doing, that I'm trying, that I'm negotiating with God when I don't in any other part of my life. Like I had a hit, like move to a small town outside of Austin and we moved within months. Mm-hmm. I had a hit, you know, this, like when I met my husband, I was like, that's it. I moved in with him 1 month later. My, you know, when I was like, I think now's the time to have a baby. We had sex. I got pregnant. Like, it was like, it's always been like that for me. And yet this one thing with drinking, like I wouldn't do, I just wouldn't. Right. And I would maybe be say, like, I was just constantly, it was this constant negotiation. And I'm 44 last year. And I was like, what am I actually doing? Like, why can't I just like stop it? Just because the universe is saying, stop drinking. And I knew on the other side of it was more magic and love and fulfillment and blessings than I could ever, ever, ever imagine. And it was just was kind of clouding me and in the way. And it was like the easiest thing I've ever done because I got really hooked on feeling good. How good. And this goes into like the work that we've done with Kathy Heller and being that receptive. And I was like, how good can I let myself feel? Right. And I noticed like only once have I really wanted a drink. And it was my mom's best friend died 2 weeks ago. And he was like, they were born on the same day. I've never known my life without him. Right. So it has been awful. And after his funeral, which was terrible as well, I really wanted a glass of wine and I ordered one and I looked at it and the song came on, Here Comes the Sun. And my dad's nickname for me was always Sunshine. And I was like, well, that's no accident. And I just remember thinking, I told my husband, I was like, I just really think that I have this glass of wine. And he was like, you're just going to get a little bit dimmer and it's not going to do the thing that you think it's going to do. It's going to do the opposite. And sure enough, I had one sip of it. And at first it tasted great. It was this really great glass of wine. And then I swallowed it and it tasted, cat, like lighter fluid. I would have spit it out if I were at home in the sink, right? And I was like, that is the nastiest thing I've ever done. All set. Left the very expensive, nice glass of wine on the table and left. And it felt so good. But it was like, sometimes we need to dance up against that.
Yeah.
And that's what feels so good about my life now, is that I don't pretend. I just don't pretend as much. Like sometimes, but I'm pretty good at catching it. And that's what I like about journaling and just any modality that you're working with, whether it's yoga and meditation, talking with a friend that won't let you BS them, right? It's just, you want to surround yourself with people that listen to you bigger than you listen to yourself.
Yes. But I also think that voice inside, like that still small voice you were hearing about this being the one thing, that whisper, stop drinking, stop drinking, stop drinking. You know, whisper is leave your job, leave your job, leave your job, right? Not the right partner, not the right place. And I think we can be so addicted to suffering, right? Yeah. To dimming our light.
Yes.
So, and I'm also on a sobriety journey. Coming up on 15 years. And similarly.
What? Oh, I had no idea. How fun. I can't wait to say that.
Yeah. Similarly, those first experiences of, you know, first funeral, first wedding, a lot of those spaces where we are conditioned to use alcohol to not feel the depth and expansiveness of quite often sorrow or deep celebration or, you know, and it's really interesting because again, that we live in a world where, first of all, we have so much abundance. We really do. We have so much abundance. You know, I mean, you were talking earlier about the recovering perfectionism thing and clothes and fashion and all that stuff. And whichever, are you still with me? I think you froze for a second.
I'm here.
Uh-oh. Yeah, you're still there. Okay, good.
Hi.
Now I see you not. Whatever adventure we choose, there's always another summit. There's always another summit.
And then does this happen to you? And if this happens to your listeners too, and if you guys want to chime in, I'd be curious. When you hit that summit, it never feels like I think it's going to feel. And it's always like, I think I'll be like elated and excited. And I don't. I'm just like, oh, okay. It's like this peace. And then my next thing, and this is where like the mind is so tricky. It's like, now what? Right?
Yeah.
Like what's next? Like we have to always be solving something, creating something. I remember like right after I married my husband, like that was the gig forever, was like finding somebody who, as my parents would say, like could handle me, right? Which is horrible. But I remember like waking up right after we got married, I was like, well, what am I going to do now? Like this drove so much of my life, finding my person. And I really did like get it right. And so that felt great. And then I remember being like, well, this is boring. Now what am I going to go do?
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because I think there's a recovery saying, which is the choice is more.
Oh my God. Or like the hungry ghost in Buddhism.
Yes.
Oh, I hate it so much. Yeah.
And I think you touched on it earlier in our conversation, but this idea of whatever label, you know, that you had. And I think, again, a lot of it is our consumerism society, right?
Yeah,
and
we
consume even relationships, right? Like, well, now I've got him.
What
now
was the worst?
The best I could have. Now we're going to have all about the best, the best, the best, the best, the best. And something that has really helped me, and I think, you know, a big piece of this is podcasting and the adventure of animal ownership. I have 9 animals. I know you shared your doggies with us down there.
Okay.
Also the adventure of parenting and just recognizing that life is messy. That's actually what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Consistently we show up, you know, regardless. If we're sick, I'm still going to feed the horses and do the chores. You know what I mean? And I think this is something that we have lost over the past 100 years as we've gained this technological age, which is so incredible because here you are in Texas.
Yeah.
I'm in Idaho. We can have this really deep dive, intimate connection and conversation, right? Mm-hmm. But I have snow outside and you don't, you know, you're going to can connect on this deep level, but a lot of what grounded us.
Yeah.
1922 was the year we had more cars than horses on major American cities. That was not that long ago. That was 102 years ago. Mm-hmm. So what that means is 100 years ago, before we went anywhere, we had to hook up to a horse, connect with them energetically. Mm-hmm. So all that anger that keeps building up that we're not, you know, I think of animals as helping us clean and clear our energy. Nature can do it too. My gardeners, mm-hmm. get your hand into the dirt, right?
Yeah.
But it helps us really physically change.
Calibrate.
Mm-hmm. And calibrate to the season, the present moment that we're in. Mm-hmm. When you were talking about anger earlier, I remember being at this, I don't remember if it was a Bible study or what, but it had a connection to a church. And this woman said that she gave a talk and she asked if any women would be interested in an angry moms group.
Oh, yeah. All day long. I have about 100.
Right, but specifically in a church community, right? Where again, you get a lot of this, you know, this is what motherhood should look like. And this is what the Bible
did she do it?
Yeah, she did it. And women, because this is where, you know, trauma work, so many roads lead to Rome. And this is why I love connecting with people where they're finally waking up to the adventure that they've chosen. And the paradox that whatever you think it is, it's actually
it's not over there. It's right here. My favorite is like whenever I'm mad about something, like let's point the finger at my husband, right? Because that's like an easy automatic. And totally relatable. Oh, it's so frustrating to me. And this is why I have to be like, it really works. I was like, nope, you don't like what you wrote last time. Because the minute I'm pointing the finger at him, it's three back at myself.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, whenever I'm mad about something, I notice my resistance to journaling the next day because I don't want to write. Where's your part in that, Anna?
Right.
Because it's so much, I don't even want to say easier. It's more familiar, right?
Yeah.
It's just more, and then you get a lot of buy-in, like go talk to another mom about, you know, things she wants to complain about. But I just have to add, I had a client in one of my artist way groups, because I lead, you know, people through the artist way, of course. And she went to like a rage room where you like go and break stuff and realized she wanted to open one. She's my across the street neighbor. And she opened one in our small town. And I refer clients to her all the time because I'm like, I don't think you're tired. I think you're angry. Go spend $40 and like go break some stuff. And it is cathartic, right? She's always telling me like when there's like a single woman that's coming by herself, like, I know, like get the Kleenex out, like, here we go. Right. Because that stuff is so like deeply stored in us. And it's really, really useful to like, let it live and breathe. And anger, quite frankly, is my favorite. Because once it's acknowledged, it moves us into action. So you were mm-hmm. saying something earlier about like what's the paradox? Like when is it we get mad?
Yeah.
It's not usually, it's always when we get mad. Like if somebody comes to me like really fed up, I'm like, you're for real. Let's go. Like, because you need to have something push you over the edge to start taking a new action.
Yeah. Do you use that in your marketing? To bring people
in? No, mm-hmm. But that's coming. You know, that's been, yeah. I think this past year, so you had a question earlier of like, when did you start coaching? Like, you know, I really started it because I needed it. I started it when I had a 4-month-old mm-hmm. and COVID hit. Mm-hmm. And one night I was really sad and really feeling pretty disconnected and lonely. And I'd started a design build company with my husband so that I wasn't looking for a business or work venture at a 4-month-old who motherhood was very, very bumpy for me and probably still is, mm-hmm. right? Because it's just constantly changing and I'm constantly rolling with it, right? Like really working on like not resisting it and going with the flow. And that can be really challenging.
Yeah.
One night I was like, I always quit on the artist way or week 8 or 9. And that's just kind of my MO. I always read like 2/3 of a book. I've had friends comment on it who have helped me pack up things. You know, when I was moving out of New York, they're like, do you notice that like you've only read 2/3 of every book in your library? I was like, what are you talking about? I read all the books. They're like, no, you've got 2/3 of every book has a bookmark in it. Isn't that funny? Right. But it's that whole concept of like, I'd always go to like 70 or 80%, never fully unleash, right? Like that wasn't safe, right? So it's that's something else that I help people through. But anyway, so one night I was like, I'm so tired of always quitting around this moment in the book, and I'm about to do it. If I coached it, then I couldn't do that. It's all about integrity. It's all about integrity, which is podcasting, because it has your butt on the line. You have to show up because you have 4,000 people waiting. That's why integrity is so great and confronting, and people don't want to do it. Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, so one night I was like, I wonder if anybody would want to do it with me. I'll just charge them $20. They can Venmo me. And I had 20 people sign up in one night. I was like, I guess people want this. So that was how it started. And then every time it just kind of shifted and then became my own thing. And now I work with private clients. And but when I look back, I'm like, I was doing this at 4 years old.
Very cool.
I had a coaching business at four, right? I was leading self-care summits at five. Like I was bringing everybody together in the neighborhood and doing a dance recital and then having it be at my parents' dinner parties and charging people like that were coming to dinner. I was like, $5, please. So like, and that's what I love doing with people that I work with is like bringing them back to like that 4 and 5 year old self. And that's where I think you hear a lot of me talking about parenting because like I live in a science experiment, right? They're like 4 and 2 and they don't have any problems.
Yeah.
They're like fully self-expressed.
Well, I think also, and we got to wrap up, believe it or not, it's been an hour. It's been a great hour. But that paradox of, you know, our innocent children, and I'm guessing your children probably look very white, privileged, et cetera, all those things, but they haven't been told those things yet. They haven't been told that they're not allowed to have problems or that they can only have these problems or they can only talk about these problems. You know, it's such a blank slate and such a blessing. And I think for all of us to remember that at our core, that's who we are at our core, right?
Well, and I think,
go ahead.
I think it's really important to model it. And I just recently heard somebody say like, well, I didn't want to, you know, cry in front of the boys. And I was like, oh, well, come to my house because I do all the time. Because I really want them to see that I have feelings. And I am feeling them and it is okay. And I wrap my arms around them and I cry. Like we've had this recent death in our family and talking a lot about death. And, you know, my 4-year-old's very inquisitive and he visited him every day in a nursing home. So like, and I think, you know, while he not understand some things about it, he knows love. He knows love. And there's a big sense that there's a big loss in our family.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And that's really important to not only show him that it's safe for him to have those emotions, but the way that he knows it's safe is by seeing me. Yeah. Not by me telling him. It's by him seeing me have the feeling.
Yeah.
You know? And that's what I just want to leave people with is like the best thing that we can do is to be honest and let ourselves feel what we're feeling.
Yeah.
It's the fastest way through the messiness.
I think this is where, you know, animals, one of my interviewees said, horses are emotional geniuses.
They are. I love horses so much. Because I was a horseback rider and they're
Yeah, we could go deep on horses. Hopefully you'll come
That's
out
a whole other show.
Yeah, one of these days. So for my final question for you, you know, first of all, I have an invitation. What breaks your heart, right? And I'm going to spin this for you into a single question. Because my last request would be that you offer our listeners a gift. And I think, given everything we've talked about, the gift is probably a prompt to go and sit down and write for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And perhaps spinning it into that question of something that breaks your heart. And I'm very sorry for your loss.
That's okay.
And it's not okay. You know,
well, it's okay in that he was suffering.
I know.
Also, my favorite thing about death, let's just say this, is that then they're always right here. Like he's right here. Like I can hear him like laughing. He's like, you know, he's like, why are you talking about, you know, he just thinks it's hilarious that I'm even, and he also loves, like, he was the fabulous gay man. And he like loves that I'm talking about him on a podcast right now. I know you do, Robert. And so he's like, quite
feel you.
Right. And he's like, tell them how fabulous I was. And so that's quite nice when people move on, mm-hmm. that we just remember the best pieces, right? That they're right there cheering me on, reminding me that like, I can do this, how much fun it's going to be, right? That's what happens for me when people move on.
But we have a death doula coming on the podcast. And this is a time of year where a lot of people and animals cross over. And if you want to know who you are, find out what you think about death, right? And again, it's one of those transitions, one of those inceptions, because sometimes it's the moment that really helps you come to life, you know,
finally heal
all the feelings. But would you just give our listeners a prompt and however you want to piece that together?
Here's the prompt. Yeah. I get asked this a lot. So I got it solid. What do you most not want to write? And you ask the question of like, what breaks my heart is when people won't let themselves tell the truth. Like they say, like the truth will set you free. It really will. When I first started writing, the truth I had to look at was that I didn't really like myself. That was not a fun time. And it was so worth it.
Yeah. Beautiful. Oh, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for sharing
your gifts. Will you please tell people how they can find you in the show notes, but just in case someone's listening and has got to come have what you've got right now.
It's super easy. It's Anna, A-N-N-A, K Morris, M-O-R-R-I-S. .com. And I also, if you want to go deeper into journaling, I have a top 10 journal prompts. Just click on freebies and it'll be right there. I also put out a lot of coaching videos. Like you mentioned, I'll have a podcast coming soon called Affundance, my spin on fun and abundance, and also a fun dance, which I was doing at 5 years old. Like it's all the same.
Where did the word come from? Do you remember the moment?
Yeah, I was journaling about it and I was like, I like fun and abundance. And then that's like Affundance. And then it's like a fun, my gosh, wouldn't that be so fun? That was it. And it was
trademark that
hard. No, I went and looked it up immediately.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being with us, Anna. I appreciate you and have a beautiful day. Hope you get out for an awesome dog walk. Thank you so much.
We will.
All right. God bless you.